Hello again and welcome again to another episode of the Echo Chamber. Finally, Jamie, finally. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay, I
Only
would
okay.
say.
Well, Only I, okay.
Let's just say every day when you wake up and you're still breathing and you can still see the world is a win. I have an
the bar
app
is my, unbelievably low.
Unbelievably. I have an app. I have a wellness app on my phone, and it has a thing which essentially says like goal for the day. One of mine is literally survive the day, and that gives me a bonus for my app score. Jamie, we're not alone today. We actually have a guest with us. We have a friend of mine that I've known for quite a while, but also someone who has put you know, the Dunning-Kruger car, the graph, you know, they have like the Mount Stupid and then the Valley of Despair, and then
Quiet.
You have the Baku, come on, then you have the then you have like the rise, and then like the peak of sustainability, and it's all based on like how many hours you spend doing something. And they say like if you've done like up to 10 hours, you're at the peak of Mount Stupid, and then when you've done 100 hours, you're at the bottom of the Valley of Despair, knowing you know nothing. And then as you get to, you know, 500, 1,000 to then 2,000 plus hours, you reach the plateau of sustainability when it comes to your expertise and knowledge. I would guarantee you that Rob here is beyond the plateau of sustainability, and he's in the mesa of godlike excellence. Rob, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good. I've done the hours. I'm not entirely sure about the godlike.
But excuse me. But a lot of this is about just putting the time in, putting the hours in. You know the details, Rob. That's what you're here for. You're here as our resident expert on the game we're going to be talking about today, which you probably would have already guessed given the name of the pod. The game, specific game we're going to be talking about today, is Call of Duty. And if you've not heard of Call of Duty, I don't know what to say.
Where have you been?
Why are you listening to this podcast? Is my question. So tell us a little bit about how you got into playing Call of Duty, Rob.
Well, through you, mate. Really, that was.
You can't blame me. Your wife might listen to this. You cannot blame me for. dear.
You were playing sort of group Battlefield, lower Battlefield, basically, weren't you? That was the
That was definitely the what do we call it? The gateway drug.
Yeah. Well, actually, you started off on Battlefront, like the Star Wars version of Battlefront.
Yes, that's true.
Lot of hours into that, didn't you, I think?
So. I did love Battlefront. The first Battlefront I spent a lot of time on. I loved that game.
Jamie, it's very similar, isn't it?
Very similar. It's just, absolutely. Jamie, have you played Battlefront? You must have.
Battlefront, yeah. I played Battlefront and then Battlefront 2. And then they did do another Battlefront, but... Battlefront 2 was my favorite. I really like Battlefront 2.
You like that? For me, it got worse and worse, I think. I was really emotionally invested in the first one. I really liked the whole... So for people who don't know, Battlefront is essentially like a big multiplayer Star Wars universe war game. So you have the troopers versus the rebels, plus or minus... various heroes that come into the game as well, so you can pick up a power up and essentially like become Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader or Boba Fett or something like that, and you have like extra powers and stuff. But it also included vehicles from the games like AT-ATs and X-Wings and things like that. It was a really, really fun, fast multiplayer game, which, you know, you fight as a trooper, immediately get killed, and then be straight back into the fray. And you could choose the different types of troopers, so like jet troopers and things like that as well. So you're right, Rob, in saying that it wasn't... I think I played Call of Duty in games like that before that, but really, in terms of the multiplayer aspect, of the gaming. It was Battlefront that really got me into playing like these big online multiplayer battles.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's good.
And that's how you got into it then, Rob?
Yeah, I played a little bit of Battlefront, and then Battlefield 1 came out.
Yeah.
This is the World War 1 version of Battlefield. And I played with Farbs and a load of friends that he knows from online, and like we had quite often had a squad playing, didn't we? Which was
always fun.
What you need.
Squad goals. Battlefield 1. Oh, what a game that was. The people I played with generally were friends that I've made through my wife, who have become friends in their own right, basically. And they were her friends back home, and then obviously friends of their friends who are big into gaming and multimedia gaming. We've actually done a pod with one of them. Hello, Neil. Yeah, Neil. Remember Neil? First person shooter pod.
Oh, yeah.
We love Neil. Neil and his brother Paul and Dave and who else? Rich and Ali. These are some of the people that kind of like rotate around with our online gaming. And we would often like kind of meet up online and just chat. That was a big thing, wasn't it? It was actually more the chat that we used to have.
The social side of it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I love that. It's funny because my first thing with Call of Duty was like the first Call of Duty when it was on the computer.
Was that like the overhead view?
It was first person shooter. And it was online. It was like my first ever thing with online, online play. But it was, you know, you had a really small map, and there was always cheaters and. It was based on World War II. Did you guys ever play it?
The classic war.
The classic one.
I think I did. As with me, you know me and my relationship with a lot of games, Jamie. It's the story that I really enjoy. So often with these early games, especially the first person shooter, I wasn't really big into the multiplayer aspect. I wanted to just play the story. I wanted to see what kind of arc they did through the story of this battle, that battle, whatever it was. And I'm pretty sure I did play the first Call of Duty.
You might have done, because it had like, you had a British soldier, an American, and you played a Russian. I think you played as like Vasily Zaitsev or something like that.
It was, I can't remember the story itself, but I did appreciate it. I appreciated the game. And you know, it's a classic trope, isn't it? We've talked about it on the first person shooter with Neil about, you know, you can't go wrong if you make a game with a half decent story, set it in the classic war, and you know, shooting Nazis. You know, what there's nothing wrong with that, is it? Like, that's like a winning formula.
It's a good recipe. Yeah.
So, Rob, tell us a bit about Battlefield 1, because I loved that game.
So obviously, Battlefield 1, set in World War 1, like confusingly, given there's lots of Battlefield games before it, calling it Battlefield 1, but it's. I know.
Very much in the spirit of a lot of gaming, you know, like you had the Xbox, then the Xbox 360, and then the Xbox One. I mean, do they not know how to count? Is that part of the reason that Microsoft had their issues? So Battlefield 1 was set in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
But what made it amazing? What really drew us into it, Rob?
Just the combination, the vehicles were good, the planes were good, things like that. It was, I know Ali particularly enjoyed the cavalry.
I'd forgotten about the cavalry. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
It was, and considering how we know that literally the horse ridden cavalry was made obsolete because of the advancements in warfare in the First World War, it's surprising how good they were to me. In the game. You could just walk around like, it's like almost like a, you know, you'd be like fighting against a machine gun, and just like ride right up to him, and just like, I'll chop your shoulder and you're dead.
Yeah. which is a common trope in most of the, even the Call of Duty. I remember playing early Call of Duty where you'd be going shooting someone directly in the face, somehow they had a knife and they just run up to you and instant dead. That's still the case.
I think there was something romantic about, like in a horrible way, but there's something weirdly romantic about Battlefield 1 as well. In that, what I really enjoyed about it was how, because anyone who knows me as well from my other life knows that I'm a bit of a, I wouldn't say history buff, but I really enjoy reading about history, and I also enjoy like seeing how things change over time. What I really liked about Battlefield 1 were things like the uniforms. Like when you played with as the French, and the French still had like their red trousers and blue jackets whilst like fighting in the trenches. I mean, that obviously did all change by the end of the war. Everyone had gone to like a drab grey khaki type thing because they realised, wearing like bright, you know, polished breastplates and feathered hats, riding a horse against the machine gun is probably not a great idea. you know, and swapping like cloth caps for metal helmets was probably a good call. But I really like those little touches in the game, and I also really enjoyed, and I think I won't be the only one who thought this, but is it the which one's the standard rifle in it? The semi-automatic rifle with a little ping sound. Ding!
Oh, it makes a ding! Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know when you like finish your clip and it's like an eight round clip or whatever it was, and it just goes tuff, 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 ding! And you have to change and you like upload from the top. I like those little details that they had with those, you know, those classic weapons and stuff. I'm going to find out what that is.
I liked it with playing with my brother because, so he's quite good at first person shooters, so he's a good, you know, damage dealer, but I'm pretty rubbish. But I was good, I was saying this before, I was quite good at running into things, avoiding getting shot and healing people who had been shot, and that would give me extra points and put me on the leaderboard for doing a role, rather than like in Call of Duty where it's just shooty, slidey, and that's it, which is not, I'm not very good at, which is why I really liked it.
Well, they had different classes, didn't they? So they had a medic class, and there was a, I was often support class, which was like big machine guns and stuff.
Yeah. You loved your LMGs, didn't you, Rob was an LMG fiend.
Yeah, that was my one.
I like an LMG, that's a good choice. That's a good choice.
Carry on, you go.
I liked repairing the vehicles. Like, if someone else was kicking the crap out of something, I liked being the guy that was sat outside the vehicle repairing it.
I love that. Yeah, because the class, that's what makes a lot of these games. I know we're spending a lot of time talking about Battlefield 1, but screw Call of Duty, they get plenty of money. Battlefield 1, but what I really liked about Battlefield 1 was those classes. And it's a funny thing with these games because we also talked about one time Hell Let Loose, which was like a super realistic World War II game that was made. I don't know if you know about that one, Rob.
I've heard of it, not played it.
Yeah. It was available on PlayStation Store for free a while back, and I downloaded it. I couldn't get into it because it was so realistic. Like, you'd have to, like, you would choose your class and all this, that, and the other, obviously. But then to like get to the front line, you'd start way back, obviously, and then you'd have to like get in a truck, and the truck would have to like drive 2 kilometers to get you to the front line. And it literally had to drive 2 kilometers in the game. And then you'd be like trying to like go across this field, and the field was enormous. So you know like how it can take you like 20 minutes to go across the field because it's that big? It would literally take you 20 minutes to trudge across this field, like they're like going down next to the hedge. And then if a sniper got you and killed you, that was it. You had to go all the way back to the beginning and then start, get on the truck again, sit there, trudge. It was too real.
There's definitely a level of realness that you can't cross because then it's just, as well just do real life.
And my favourite thing about the support, you know, the realistic aspect of the support was to fix a truck, to fix a tank that was, or whatever, was getting like blasted with mortars. All you had to do was like be prone behind it in defilade, as they say, and then just like get your wrench out and like turn your wrench in the direction of the vehicle, and it would just magically be repaired, like whilst in the midst of battle. You gotta love
I love that. And like someone who's been shot 10 times, I just go in, stab them with something.
Yeah.
Sorted them out, mate.
Yeah, mate. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's going to be in the updated ALS manual coming out. So that kind of ATLS manual. Just stab them in the leg with something, and then they will
come back, no problem. Yeah.
But it was the classes that made it, wasn't it? That type, the variability. Because you think, you only have a certain number of maps. There were a fair few maps, but it wasn't that many. Mm. And then, but it was always different, isn't it? Every time you played it, it was different. You had different skill sets on each side, different like abilities, more or less camping bastards. And then...
And the people that somehow managed to get a plane like that, how did they do that?
Yeah.
You've only just started. How have you got a plane? You have to kill a certain number of people. How have you done that?
I know.
Never understood that.
I know. Yeah, so for Battlefield 1, you had the assault, medic, support, and scout. I think scout was the hardest one. I was generally either medic or assault. I think that was my thing. You were support, Rob.
I was definitely scout. Medic.
Yeah. Medic's great. Medic's a great choice.
Yeah.
Is that kind of all rounder and a very useful person to have in your team. And then you had the tankers, people in the tanks, you had pilots. What I liked about that was he could survive potentially getting shot down and like jump out with your thing. Yeah. But then you also obviously had like the pilots' guns and the pilot's hat
and the pilot's outfit.
Yeah, and you looked like a pilot as well, yeah. Oh dear. Good times.
There was a trophy that was roadkill. You had to kill, I think it was two people with a plane. So people running along the floor, you have to
just mow them down. That's so dear.
Just like they did in the Great War.
Yes, famously.
Oh god. Oh dear. And it was all biplanes and things like that, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and
it was nice.
It was nice. It was a much more genteel total for it's very difficult to talk about these games without like listening to how absurd you sound.
Yeah.
You know, because these are based on like loosely. Are based on actual
atrocities.
World events and atrocities. You know, we're like, oh yeah. it is very difficult to in light of like the state of the world as well, it's very difficult to actually like take yourself seriously when you're talking about this. But I think it's important to remember that things like World War One and World War Two happened before video games. So it's like, you know, that idea that video games instilled violence upon the planet is kind of in a way, it's kind of we're reclaiming that violence that was done against
humanity.
To be
fair, I'm pretty sure Nintendo existed before World War One.
So, I wouldn't be surprised. What was it again? It was
18 something or something, or 19 something, something ridiculous. 18 something, I'm sure it was.
I'm gonna have to look that
not
up
that
now.
I'm gonna blame everything on Nintendo.
Well, why not?
Part of me was thinking all these wars are because, you know, they had ball in a cup and they just couldn't get it. Oh damn it, the start of war.
Yeah, you're right. Nintendo was founded on the 23rd of September 1889.
Yeah,
in Kyoto.
It was all Nintendo's fault.
It was originally a playing card business. I mean, to be fair to them, they were always a gaming thing. But that's incredible. I had no idea about that.
There you go. Pointless fact today.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, though.
But so how did you sort of transition from that to Call of Duty? Why Call of Duty now?
Basically, well, I think we played a bit of Battlefield 5 as well, Battlefield V, the Second World War one, which wasn't quite as good, unfortunately. Mm. It just didn't quite hit the spot. Like, some of the vehicles are really good, but it wasn't quite there.
I know. We had too much good times with Battlefield 1, I think, and it just wasn't that. It just didn't feel right.
It was better when they introduced it. They had a Pacific update, which was better, but that was like, I can't remember, 6-9 months down the line.
Yeah.
Once we'd been like, because I was playing with Ali, but most of the other guys weren't too interested in that.
No.
And then after that, it was 2019, I think, Modern Warfare came out, Call of Duty, which is perfectly timed for us not being able to do anything at all, go anywhere.
Well, yes.
Yes.
So loads of us are playing on there. Playing on that, the boys.
For those of you who don't know, there was a certain event that occurred late in 2019 and the early 2020s year, which I think they pronounced it coronavirus. Is that right?
That's the one.
We rarely hear about it. So,
no.
You might have gone, you know, past your radar. But you're right. We had a lot. Well, some of us had a lot of free time. And to be fair, some of us had a lot of time. Well, needed a lot of decompression. And actually being able to empty a clip into someone's face virtually. was cathartic at times.
Yeah.
But let's not make this into a therapy session. we did. So we spent a lot of time on that.
And do you play? Did you play the single player, or is it purely multiplayer now? What are you? Because.
I've played the single player for Modern Warfare.
Yeah, yeah. Modern Warfare single player is actually really good. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was. Is that the one where there's the? Hold on, I need to get this right because there's some controversial things that came out with that one. Which one was it? No Russian. Which one was that? Was that Modern Warfare 1? The first Modern Warfare that came out. The
first Modern Warfare. It was like a more of like Russian, like as USSR former state sort of thing. That was the focus of the game.
Well, there were some real controversies around it because some of the levels you played essentially as special forces operatives, like committing essentially terrorist acts, which you could skip if you wanted to. These are not games for children. I think it's really important to stress this.
They should stop playing them then. Stop beating me.
Yeah,
exactly. But I find it really disturbing, actually, that these kids, because they just, and a lot of the time it's because parents don't really understand the nature of gaming, even with like our essentially the same certification as like movies and things do, but like for some reason. It seems to be much more, well, not whether it's acceptable or if there's a blind spot to it. There seems to be a bit of a blind spot to it, I think, when it comes to games. Oh, it's just a video game.
I think that's exactly what it is, because the people still have it. Video games are for kids.
Yeah.
Therefore,
these video games.
It's a video game. Therefore, it's for kids.
Modern Warfare is not a kid's game, you know, it very much deserves its 18 rating. Mm. And the themes that they do, you know, they do. It's not just about the themes as well. Like, it's understanding that actually this is awful. This is like why GTA needs an 18 rating. Because, yes, you are playing a criminal and you're doing horrible things, but you need to understand that this is actually really bad. You know, you can go in into it and understand that there's a disconnect between reality and what's actually happening on screen, but that becomes a little bit more difficult, I think, as a child. And I mean that as like anyone under the age of 18 can be like potentially really badly affected by some of the stuff that goes on and the way that people behave in these games. And because they look so real superficially, like I said, you know, forget about the arcadey bollocks and being able to respawn and all that, because it looks so real, I think it can have a real kind of emotional impact if you're not prepared for it. I mean, I was emotionally affected by that No Russian level. And for those who don't know, essentially what happens is it's a optional level in one. I can't remember which one it is. I need to double check. It's an optional level where essentially you play a Russian operative and you're. It was in the Call of Duty, it's Modern Warfare 2. Yeah, it was a controversial level because you go into a airport and a really busy airport in a Russian airport, pretending to not be Russian. So that's the joke, isn't it? That's the ridiculousness. You are a Russian operative pretending not to be Russian, going into an airport and shooting a whole bunch of civilians. Like, the whole level is literally just you going in with assault rifles, you and three other guys going in and, you know, mowing down these people. It was a huge thing at the time, I remember. It was the 2009 game, which is not the one we're talking about now. But I remember it was a big deal at the time. I don't know why I got into that, really. But I think it's more because I just remembered that level. But it's from the wrong game. We're talking about Modern Warfare.
Rebooted,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my little rant about...
Please. Well, my big thing with the new one... With the new one, so I didn't pay for it, because I know you could... am I right with this? You didn't have to pay for it. You could just get the free
Warzone.
Battle
Royale.
Yeah,
you can just get Warzone, yeah.
Warzone, sorry, yeah. So I sort of played that. And it was fine. And it was quite... It's good fun, and especially fun if you're playing with someone. And I can really see that. And if... Obviously, if people want to play, I would definitely re-download it so I can play with people. But, like, I'm not paying all that money for it.
No.
And it was so big... It took up like half of my PlayStation's space, if not more.
Well, that's
one
it,
game,
it?
And it would download stuff I didn't want that was not going to play.
I know, all the time. You buy like a terabyte hard drive expansion?
Not a big one, yeah. Just because Call of Duty was taking up too much stuff, and I couldn't download any other games. Essentially,
part of me thinks that's the point. They've done that on purpose. Mm. Part of me genuinely thinks, oh, so you have to pay us.
It's not, to be fair though, it's only really Call of Duty. There's nothing else that's that big.
Yeah. Call of Duty takes the mick with the amount of space it takes, let's be honest. But it is a fun game. Yeah, so the Modern Warfare reboot was literally just called Call of Duty Modern Warfare. And I think there were already 4 or 5 previous Modern Warfares, I think. Mm. I think there's at least 4.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah, there was at least 4. There was the World War II Call of Duty, and then there was Black Ops, which was a big thing. But it was the Call of Duty Modern Warfare that was rebooted in 2019. That was the big one. Mm. That was an excellent game. Yeah. And it had an excellent story as well, and excellent characters. Yeah. And it was really well done. But it was the multiplayer bit that really got everyone excited.
And I think that's what they realized. Is the moneymaker, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the skins being ludicrously expensive, microtransactions for them. And skins are a huge thing, especially with younger people. It's a huge thing. Like, if you're playing with a normal skin, you are, you know, you need to be cool.
You can earn skins sometimes. Like, they give away some skins free, but if you want a lot of skins, you have to pay for the Battle Pass. And if you want a really lot of skins, you have to play for... What they on the new one? It's Black Cell, which is like £25 a time, something like that.
Ooh,
it's not cheap. It really is a lot of money, and you can't use COD points for it either. It's actual like money that you have.
Really?
To pay. Yeah.
No way.
So Infinity Ward.
If you get the Black Cell thing every time.
And it's also you can thing. Play as Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, I was just this morning killing Nicki Minaj. That was,
oh, excellent.
I'm not sure that Nicki Minaj has the Special Forces experience.
No,
well, that's what you say, but she's there. Snoop Dogg's there too. You know.
I'm not sure Snoop Dogg would pass the drug test to get into...
Snoop Dogg's had at least 2 games, I think, with him in it.
Yeah, he has.
He was in the World War II one.
Isn't he also in... Oh, well, let me get this right.
Do you remember True Crime Streets of LA? He was in that. I remember that.
Yeah, I think Snoop's been in quite a few things, actually.
Snoop is Snoop, yeah. Ugh.
He's still snooping around.
He's snooping around.
Yeah.
He's actually... Have you ever seen him actually play Call of Duty?
No.
He's really good.
Oh, I can believe it.
He live streams himself playing it. He's sitting there just smoking away. Just pop, pop, and just destroying people. On Modern Warfare, which is probably why he ended up getting put in the game, because he plays it so much. And
He's often smoking, actually, and his skins are often smoking.
Yeah.
It's such a huge just a huge game now, like from a purely business point of view, and I hate bringing this up, but yeah. It is genuinely, isn't it? I can't remember. I'm going to see when the release was. Pre-release, people were going crazy in 2019. About it, if I can remember, and I think I just need to try and see what its sales were. So, Modern Warfare, okay, made $600 million in its first 3 days of release.
Wow,
$600 million. It is bigger. This is what I would say when I talk about like how the video game industry is much bigger than Hollywood. It is. Exponentially bigger. 600 million in its first 3 days. Hollywood would, you know, that we're talking like Steven Spielberg, you know, not released a movie for 10 years and with like an ensemble cast of all Oscar winners to get that kind of revenue in its opening weekend, you know, and it probably wouldn't even get close to it. And it earned basically. By December the 18th of 2019, and it was released. When was it released? Not long before that. By December the 18th, they'd made over $1 billion. And in September of 2020, so just a year later, they had sold 300 million units. Not 300. Sorry, that's ridiculous. 30 million units.
But it's.
I can't even read.
It's sad though, because the more they've grown, the more like. You know, you see, either you die a hero or you see yourself, you live long enough to become EA, isn't it? That's what they say.
And
that's sort of where they're going, because it's like, you know, how FIFA has a new one every year and just churns it out.
Yeah.
Every year. God, I feel like Call of Duty is going the same way.
Well, they weren't going to do it this year, and then it was going to be like an add-on content, Modern Warfare 3, and then they decided to make it a full standalone game. But it's just reskins of Modern Warfare, the original Modern Warfare 2's game. Like,
they got
it's just reskins of all their levels. It's good because I didn't play Modern Warfare 2, so I didn't. Like the original Modern Warfare 2, so I don't know those maps.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if I'd feel a bit shortchanged if I had played it.
Or well, they got mocked at the Game Awards, didn't they? They got mocked.
Oh,
saying that this speech is shorter than Call of Duty's single player campaign.
Can you just give me 1 second?
Which doesn't surprise me, because, you know, as I said, the money is in the multiplayer. Mm. It's like Fortnite. The money's in the multiplayer, not in the.
Well, all these skins, like, they cost a lot of money. Even a cheap one is like a tenner, you know? Just to get a pack of skins and a couple of gun things. And it's
kind of mad when you really think it doesn't change the game.
No. Well, that's the whole point, because they tried DICE with Battlefront 2, the second Star Wars thing. They tried to make that, they put the microtransactions too much to the fore, so it ended up being a bit play to win, and then it really hit the game sales. So there's the tipping point. You can have people don't mind having pay to win if it's a free game, but if it's a game you've paid 70 odd quid for, and then people are able to buy advantage, then that's not reasonable. Whereas skins, I don't really care about skins at all. I'm quite happy for people to spend their money on skins so I can play the game.
They have different developers as well, because like it's Infinity Ward have been there from the very beginning, but there's three other developers, and they basically collaborate or occasionally just put out their own ones. But it's always the Infinity Ward ones that are the ones that have the big releases. And, you know, like, they're the ones that did Modern Warfare 2, you know. And obviously they started with the original Modern Warfare, but when Modern Warfare 2 came out in 2009, it was a big thing. Then, you know... and then Modern Warfare 3, but then Black Ops was done by Treyarch, and then Sledgehammer Games did the Advanced Warfare 1, which really was not, I don't think it got much traction. And then Vanguard, I think, is the only one I remember I played with you, Rob, I think it was with you, wasn't it? Which was a Sledgehammer one. Sledgehammer Games came out with Vanguard, and Vanguard was the answer to Battlefield 5, wasn't it, really? Because Vanguard was the World War II Call of Duty.
That was it.
And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I played that because Call of Duty over Battlefield, what I liked about Call of Duty over Battlefield was always the story in the first story mode. But I found that the story in Vanguard was a bit weak. And it's probably because it was not an Infinity Ward one, which is a bit harsh on Sledgehammer, but do better. And I think Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 is another Sledgehammer one, actually, the one that came out last year.
It's interesting because it's like you can use the weapons from Modern Warfare 2 in it. All of your skins in Modern Warfare 2 have swapped over to Modern Warfare 3, which just shows how much of a kind of DLC thing it was. But it's
which
really
just shows
bizarre.
How much basically the same game, I would say.
Well, they have
slapped a new badge on it.
Like they have changed the dynamics slightly in it and stuff, but it's a continuation, a big continuation, essentially. That's the...
In some ways, I don't mind it because there is a lot of work that goes into. Like, there's loads of stuff that was added, especially for the PlayStation 5 versions, with the trigger mechanics and things like that, which adds to it. Mm. But I think I share a lot of the reservations that you have, Jamie, with it. That it's almost gone to the point where it's really big, really brash, and it's just too expensive now. And it's almost like it's eaten itself. Oh, and I think I might have another expert joining us. There we are. now, Cameron, my baby boy, has just joined us, having woken up from his nap. So
lovely.
We might have to call it a day, lads, in a minute. But he's enjoying looking around. But as I said earlier, I'm very against children being involved with this game. But I think I'll forgive him because he is only 11 months old.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, the reason I always have it in my library is lots of people play it, and I would love to play with people. And it's difficult to find games that people actually will play together. So on the other front, I do. That's why I've still got Fortnite just in case someone wants to play it. I've still got Call of Duty knocking around just in case.
Well, if you're ever online, but the thing is, the problem is with you, Jamie, is that you are a sensible person and you go to bed at a sensible hour because you do like have healthy habits, like
eating
well.
The wife tells me to go.
Whereas
right bedtime.
What's your average start time on a Modern Warfare set?
Yeah, not early. Past 11, I would say. So.
Yeah, generally past midnight is when it really starts kicking off. Yeah. And it's that classic thing when you're in a squad, especially like a duo or a trio, and you're like, and then you play a war zone, and then you do really badly, and you go, we can't end it on that, lads. Yeah. We cannot end it on being like teabagged by 12-year-old Korean kids. we have to keep playing, and then you like look at your watch and it's like 2:30 and you have to get up at 6.
Oh my god, that sounds awful.
But you're like, we had to do it. The fate of humanity was
ridiculous, people.
But you gotta love it. We could talk about this for hours, I think. But I think we might have to like knock it on the head there, lads. Rob, any final thoughts about Modern Warfare, Call of Duty, Battlefield, any of the kind of multiplayer shoot 'em up games?
I mean, they're still really enjoyable. I keep playing it, so it must be good. But
therein is the crux of it all, and what these gaming developers have figured out. It is like endorphin crack.
Yeah. It is.
We love
and
it.
And I gotta get me
it.
That endorphins.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that I get slaughtered all the time. Like I still play it, even though I'm getting absolutely massacred. Most times I play it, I'm still playing it. So
I know it's a great. But then when the victories come. It's all the sweeter.
Yeah, just definitely.
It was all worth it.
Yeah. It was all worth it. Absolutely. All right, lads. We'll call that a day then. Cheers.
All right, guys. Cheers.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/theechochamber, echo spelled correctly. I've been your host, Farbod, and my co-host has been Jamie. See you again next time, Game Dorks!